Let's get it. Yes, Lord. I'm living. Soul surviving. Three spares, 100K on the mileage. Let's get it. In the city of flawless women, my God.
Hello and welcome to the Lookout Landing podcast. This is episode 10. I am Kate Prusser, managing editor of Lookout Landing, and I am joined today by my good friend and compatriot, John Troopin. John, how are you doing?
Doing very well. Just got back from an extremely entertaining baseball game, which the Mariners decided to win, kindly enough.
We will get into that, but we have another guest with us today, and we are very excited about that. Mm-hmm. It is none other than our own Jake Mailhot. Jake.
Hello. How's it going?
It's good to have you here. Good to have you here talking about pitching, your passion.
Oh, yes. Even the last two articles that I wrote were about not pitching.
Well, you know, the people demand their Taylor Motter content.
Oh, yes. Yes, they do.
We gotta give the people what they want. So the last time we spoke, it was, John, a little more doomy and gloomy, right?
Indeed.
A little...
Our Zach Sanders decided kindly enough to join us from his lair, and appropriately enough was fairly pessimistic about a lot of things that the Mariners had done, and there was not much reason to be anything other than pessimistic.
Yeah, there was no joy in Marinersville to be had. I am a fairly optimistic and positive person, and I really fell down into a dark, dark place there for a while.
Well, and spawned a fantastic new slogan yes. for the team. This is no longer the season of Go Biz. It is the season of Fuck This, apparently. Something it is, and I'm glad people are enjoying it.
I just want to go on record saying I did not ever mean for that to kind of blow into the thing that it became.
Can't bottle lightning, Kate.
Well, so things look very different. Here we are, a week removed from that, and things have been pretty good. We swept the Rangers. Mm-hmm. We won 2 out of 3. Won the series against the Marlins. So let's just kind of catch up briefly with what happened there. First of all, the Rangers, who I know we've been leery of, they did win the division last year, but boy, oh boy, did they look like hot trash.
Mm-hmm. There were a lot of things that I think most baseball analysts looked at that Rangers season and said they're going to regress. They won all these one-run games. They didn't really do anything particularly well. They had a decent bullpen, but beyond that, not a lot that would indicate, you know, this is a team that should be leading the American League in terms of record. But they have looked much worse, I think, than just a team suffering from regression. Mm-hmm. Jake, what have you noticed that has really stood out to you about them in that series or overall?
Yeah, I think... their offense doesn't. I mean, it seems to be they're scoring runs just fine. Like, I don't see any problems there. But their pitching staff they can't get it together. Whether it's relying on Andrew Cashner and Tyson Ross to anchor a rotation, even though they're dealing with injuries, and Cole Hamels looks like he's taken a step back in the last year, and their bullpen it's a tire fire right now. It's so bad.
Yeah. Sam Dyson going on the most suspicious 10-day deal right, that I have ever seen.
Right, with a badly strained ERA.
Exactly. Yeah, and, you know, I think they'll get better when Beltre gets back, but yeah. Beltre now looks like he's weeks away instead of days away, which, you know, say what you will about Rangers. I think we're all pretty strongly on board with Beltre being an incredibly fun player and good for baseball.
Absolutely.
But it is good in a callous sense for Mariners baseball if Adrian Beltre takes his time while healing.
I also think, I mean, with the Rangers series, I think they caught the Mariners at the wrong time, right? We were coming off this mm-hmm. really disappointing start to the season, and mm-hmm. Felix is starting the first game at home, mm-hmm. and I just think it was sort of that time where Felix said enough is enough, and he pitched a great game on that Friday night, mm-hmm. and then following up with James Paxton on Saturday, like that was just it was an incredible brutal. 1-2 punch.
Mm-hmm. It was fun to see. And I believe they got blown out by Oakland today.
They did.
Which I believe means they lost the series there.
How about Oakland?
Unfortunately, if you turn that around, our next series could be a little bit more challenging than we would like with four games at Oakland. That starting rotation looks fairly decent.
Mm-hmm. Mataneja had a no-hitter going against the Astros with a 5-0 lead the other day, and then the Astros like devil magicked him out of that.
Oh yeah, bad.
Yeah, that was an epic collapse. So, mind you, they can still they still have it in them to collapse, but unfortunately, so do we. So, that's going to be a much tougher series, I think, than it was. It'll also be interesting to get back to playing the AL West after we had quite a holiday here with playing the Marlins.
Oh yeah.
And you know, not just a team that's not in our division, but not even in our league. Which is always, it's always interesting to me to see guys match up who have never seen any one of these other guys before. Mm. So what really stood out to you from this series?
For me, just having gone to every game, it was impressive to see. I mean, I know this is not quite as important to us going forward since we don't play them again, but the Marlins lineup is terrifying.
It really is.
And I think, you know, D. Gordon had a remarkably D. Gordon, or has a remarkably D. Gordon line so far. I think he's hitting .314 with a .328 on base percentage and like a .364 slugging percentage. It's like, yep, that's D. Gordon. But, you know, limiting, you know, Gordon and Yelich, who looks like an all-star caliber player again.
Huge breakout for him this year, don't you think? You
know, Stanton looks terrifying as
usual. Oh, man, that home run today was insane.
It was no joke. That pitch was maybe on the, you know, outside corner changeup or maybe even off the plate, and he put it. You know, I don't know. There was a photo. I don't know if you guys saw it on Twitter of like the aftermath. In the pen of just like beer and food just smashed everywhere.
Yes, friend of the site at 2 R's 2 L's had that. Mm-hmm. Daniel Carroll. That was a really great shot. It's funny because, and again, when you don't have to see someone all the time, you don't really get sick of them. So I feel like we were all kind of rooting for Stanton to hit. Everyone wanted to see Stanton hit a moonshot.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And how perfect that we got it today where the Mariners had already built, like, a pretty substantial lead. Like, that game really wasn't in danger. Mm-hmm. So it was just, like, gravy to get to see. It was just good old entertaining baseball.
Yeah. Well, and I guess to that end, you know, the Mariners held the Marlins and that extremely good lineup, which I think was at the top of the league in run differential or near it coming into this series, under 4 runs a game, which is, you know, that's not earth-shattering, but that's solid. That's what you want to be at if you're a competitive team. If you're holding the, you know, opposing team to under 4 runs a game, mm-hmm. and you're scoring, your offense isn't atrocious, you know, you should be winning most of your games, right? And we had obviously that brutal Tuesday night game where, you know, we got one hit, but
Wei Yinchen, that's gonna sting for
whatever.
A while.
But
he was hitting his spots though. He was on, like, he just executed really well that night. Yeah.
He just happened to have like a probably one of the best games he'll pitch all season, don't you think?
Right, yeah. Exactly. Definitely.
So exactly. That's the way the cookie crumbles sometimes.
Yeah, them's the breaks.
Exactly. But meanwhile, we have a Mitch Haniger. And I mean, was there anyone who had a huger series than Mitch Haniger? Just objectively.
It's so incredible that, like, it just continues to grow. Like, the legend of Mitch Haniger, like, began in the beginning of the season, and it just continues to grow. It's crazy.
You know, and of course there are the naysayers who, you know, pull out James Jones's hot start because he's right now in line with them. But I think if you don't think that Mitch Haniger is a better baseball player than James Jones, you are just willfully deluding yourself.
I think it's difficult to, I mean, you know, it's difficult to see him falling off too hard, I guess. Like, when we came into the season, I was obviously very optimistic. And Jake, I'd be curious to hear what you were thinking, what you had in expectations for him. But I think it felt like he would have a decent capacity to be a very successful baseball player. I didn't anticipate necessarily that he would look this good. I mean, no one anticipated he would look this good, but that not only the results would be there, but that the process would consistently look this good. I remember, you know, the second game of the year where he had that bad at-bat against Ken Giles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember him having another bad at-bat since then.
Yeah,
he struck out against Tom Kohler, I think, in his first at-bat of that game, and then the next time he came up, he was ready and smacked a ball. I think he had a homer in his next at-bat. You know, it was like, oh, he made an adjustment, and I don't know, seeing guys make adjustments in real time is something that we've come to expect from Robbie and from Nelson Cruz,
right,
and from Kyle Seager, and having another guy who's doing that, maybe he's going to struggle later on, but so far he's doing that, and that's really cool to see.
Yeah, I think, I mean, it's a big separator for him, right? Like,
mm-hmm.
You're thinking about a young player in his early years in the majors, and for a lot of young kids it's going to be really overwhelming. They're not going to make those adjustments, but to see him do it so quickly and to be so consistently good and having good at-bats every single game, is really encouraging. Mm-hmm. Plus, it seems like he's just really aware of his strengths and his game and how that translates into like a plan at the plate, right? There was a great quote on Twitter from Eno Saris.
Eno Saris, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just such a great insight into how Mitch thinks about himself and his game and how, he's just playing into his strengths. And I think that's really, really, it's really important for a young player like that to think of that way.
Yeah,
it's absolutely fun to have a super intellectual baseball player, too, because, you know, somebody who really does take the advanced metrics into consideration and who is obviously so kind of cerebral about his game. I think it's a very good match for a Seattle fan base that is in many ways, I think, maybe a more analytical, thoughtful fan base.
Sure. Yeah. And it definitely makes sense why Jerry DePoto loves him.
Like, absolutely. Right.
Like the man crush there is just so obvious.
Well, speaking of man crushes then, or just crushes, one of the big things we had this weekend with the Marlins being in town is, of course, Ichiro's return to Safeco. Oh. An amazing moment today that I know, John, you were there in person for, so I'm going to let you talk about that. But also, we have a Twitter question from Nevermore, which is appropriately poetic, I think, for Ichiro, who's a very poetic baseball player. What is your favorite moment of Ichiro's career? And I wasn't here for Ichiro's career, really. I was not living in Seattle at the time, so I didn't get to see it, really. But I'm going to go ahead and pick today. So, John, you want to talk about that a little?
I'm happy to talk about it a little bit being there, but I also want to hear Jake's perspective on it, since you talked about it a little bit on Twitter, which is a very different perspective, but I think one that a lot of people probably, if you had the chance to listen at work or listen while you were in school or just wherever you might have been.
Right.
But I was there. I was in the 330 section right behind home plate. And, you know, people had been chanting, Ichiro, Ichiro, every at bat, which was really encouraging. And, you know, just one of those things where it makes you feel good about being a Seattle fan. But it was one of the, it made me think about, you know, the D. Gordon home run after first game after Jose Fernandez passed away, and like the Derek Jeter home run in the All-Star game. Just those moments where, you know, I think Kate, you may have I don't know if you were on Twitter, but you mentioned sort of about how baseball can sort of seem better than fiction, and mm-hmm. I remember I, you know, was talking with a few people about this, but it really felt surreal, you know, and it was so spectacular, and it was the perfect moment, you know, the game was pretty much in hand, mm-hmm. You know, Evan Marshall wasn't someone we were worried about, oh, does this mean he's good, does this mean he's bad, it's like, okay, it's Evan Marshall. Like,
we know what Evan Marshall is, more or less, exactly.
Or we don't have too much expectation for him, exactly, mm-hmm. and man, you know, just, it was an entire stadium of people so full of joy about a baseball event, not and a human event, not just their team succeeding, but the work that Ichiro put in, and to sort of see that symbolically even realized was spectacular. And I know he was for a long time the only really fun thing to watch offensively for this team, and the only person that you would look forward to see, look forward to their at bats. And I think I appreciate him immensely for that. Jake, what was your feeling there?
Yeah, I mean, so on Twitter, I was talking about how I was watching it at work. Mm-hmm. I was watching it. I've got a couple of monitors, so it was in sort of in the corner of one of my monitors, and I saw that he was going to lead off that inning, and so like I closed all the windows on my monitors and focused on the game, and the fact that he like hit it on the first pitch, and it was just like the perfect moment, like mm-hmm. this encapsulation of like his legacy in Seattle. And it was sort of funny, like we always hear about these stories about how Ichiro would hit home run after home run in batting practice, and mm-hmm. that he could hit home runs whenever he wanted to, but he didn't want to, and it's sort of like it was this moment where like, yeah, I can hit home runs whenever I want to, and I'm gonna do it right now.
Yes,
it was exactly. Oh man, it was perfect. It was just uh-huh. so good.
Yeah,
I think as far as like a favorite Ichiro moment, I think for me, I can't pick any one moment. I think for me it's more just what he represented. We talk a lot about how representation matters in today's society, and mm-hmm. and for Ichiro, that's he was my representation on the Mariners. Like I loved Griffey, I loved Edgar, but mm-hmm. When Ichiro joined the Mariners, that was the moment when I could see myself on the field. Mm-hmm. I could just picture myself playing the game through Ichiro's eyes and actions, and so he's a huge hero of mine, and so to see him come back at this point in his career and have the game that he did, and even like the series that he did, like he had that mm-hmm. great catch on great in quotation marks.
It looked great.
A lot of fun. And it was a good catch. He made it like look
That's true.
A little bit silly, but it was wonderful, and he was laughing about it, which was also fun.
Yeah, it was really touching to see him come back and see the reception that he got from the crowd, and mm-hmm. I really wish that I could have made it down to a game, because that would have meant a lot to me.
We as Mariners fans don't have a ton of history, like the franchise is so new, mm-hmm. and that we're really just kind of rounding now into seeing things like players that we grew up with, if you're my age, getting inducted into the Hall of Fame, and
sure.
some of those careers ending. And it was just, mm-hmm. it was such a special like franchise moment, and a reminder mm-hmm. that we aren't just this tiny little team mm-hmm. locked away in the Pacific Northwest. Like, we have this connection to broader baseball. Right.
Yeah.
And I think to that point, it's like, we've had struggles as a franchise with putting together team success, but the individual players that are unforgettable that we've had, are so valuable, and Jake, I completely I completely like Ichiro. I grew up loving Griffey, and Edgar was sort of the player I wanted to be like when I was younger, but that was a little bit earlier, and Ichiro was sort of the player that was always there, like you knew every time he came up Ichiro was going to give you a good at-bat. You knew yeah. he was going, you know, every time he came to the plate and every time you watched a Mariner game, you might see Ichiro do something spectacular.
Right, exactly.
And he was the guy who everyone on the team wanted to be. You know, you had fights over number 24 when we were in, you know, T-ball and in, you know, elementary school, all the way through, you know, middle school, high school, and everything. You know, everyone wanted to be 51. You know, yeah. and it's like that means something. And to have a player like that come back and see people properly, you know, be enthusiastic and just, I guess I shouldn't say properly, but it was nice to see that other people felt that same way.
Sure. Yeah, definitely.
Right. Well, perhaps turning our eyes to the actual baseball played this weekend, we saw a few great pitching performances, and we saw some uneven or shaky pitching performances.
Mm-hmm.
So let's maybe talk about that. The starters, are they who we thought they were? And if that's the case, where are we with that?
Yeah, I think there are a few that that have really opened some eyes. I think Paxton is better than anyone could ever expect him to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Miranda's looked really, really good.
What is going on there? Because everyone told me, and I mean, I'm no pitching expert, but everyone told me, you know, he's outperforming his peripherals, regression, etc. And boy, if he hasn't just gone out there and given us some really solid, you know, 5, 6, 7 innings of work every time. What do you attribute his success to?
I think he's commanding the zone really well. His splitter looks really, really great. It looks a lot better than it did last year. And I think he's throwing it a lot more often than his changeup. I'm not sure if they're different pitches or not, but
that was what I was going to ask, because his changeup was one of his best pitches last year, and it seems like that is sort of blended together.
Yeah. So, whatever it is, it's been a great pitch for him this year, mm-hmm. and it's helped him. I mean, he's inducing a lot more ground balls. His fly ball rate isn't as high, he's his strikeout rate and his walk rate are right in line with what he was doing last year, which is perfectly acceptable. And I think he's just he's building on a pretty successful year last year.
Yeah, to that point, like as you said, you know, he's attacking the zone a lot more. He, Paxton, and Felix are all, I think, according to PitchFX at least, or TrackMan, I guess, their zone percentages are over 50%, mm-hmm. Which is for all of them, a jump from last year. I think Miranda was, a little bit lower than that. I don't remember exactly how much, but he was around there. But his command in the zone has improved, as you said, and he's still getting somewhat fortunate. You know, he's still got a fairly high strand rate and a lot of things that are going well for him. But, last year, I think we talked about him being a candidate for regression because he so outperformed his peripherals. And I think this offseason he improved. He was a guy who had never thrown more than, 120 innings, I think, in a season.
Sure.
And he hadn't had that many innings in the minors. He hadn't had that many innings in Cuba. It's a guy who still had learning to do and improvements to make in as a pitcher. So I think he's definitely balanced that potential for regression with just simply improving as a pitcher.
Sure, definitely.
Gallardo and Iwakuma, unfortunately, have not looked quite as good.
Okay, I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to become our staff Gallardo defender.
Yeah.
Because
what?
I I think Giovanni Gallardo is perfectly acceptable. He won't blow anyone away, but I think he's a lot better than people give him credit for.
What makes you say this that might be treated as blasphemy in some circles? I'm willing to venture a little bit out on this ledge with you. I'm scared of heights, though, so you're going to have to convince me. You're going to have to hold my hand.
So, the first point, I mean, we've all seen it. His velocity's up back to where it was in 2015 when he was healthy. That's, I mean, first of all, that's a really good sign. The fact that he's healthy, the results should follow. Maybe. The other thing I was looking at, so when you're looking at average exit velocity off opposing batters, I'll give you one guess, or maybe a couple guesses, to guess what the average exit velocity off of Giovanni Gallardo has been this year.
I would say it has to be around average. I would have assumed it's a little bit above average, maybe like 88, 89.
That's exactly what I would have guessed, honestly.
It's 85.5.
Really?
And guess where that ranks in all of Major League Baseball? 21st.
Wow.
21st lowest, or however you want to say that.
Best. I guess.
So I think the contact that he's allowing, I mean, he has given up a few home runs, but I think on average, he's allowing pretty weak contact, and he's getting fairly unlucky that those weak hit balls aren't being turned into outs.
Only 23% hard hit, according to Fangraphs. Yeah.
Right. And that BABIP
373.
Of, yeah, exactly.
That's insane. Yeah, that's...
So there's some regression that's going to happen there, I think. His strikeout rate isn't where we want it to be, but I think he's perfectly acceptable as a number five. I don't think he should lose his job when Smiley comes back. Mm-hmm. I think he'll be a lot better for us moving on forward.
Sure.
So you think Miranda is the one who should?
Ooh, I didn't say that either. I don't know. I think Iwakuma's got to show a lot of progress in the next couple of months.
He might be a candidate for a Sam Dyson-esque DL stint to get himself right. That breaks my heart, too,
because I love Iwakuma.
What about Iwakuma as a bullpen piece? Could that ever happen?
I mean, that's what he started as, but...
Yeah, I don't think so. I don't think his stuff plays up in the bullpen. I think, his repertoire is so large that it's sort of like... He would outthink himself as a bullpen piece, right? I don't know.
And yeah, it's not like he's holding back a bunch of velocity. He's gonna bump up from 86 to 88 and suddenly be knocking people down again. But 86 to 88 as a starter, that makes a difference.
Yeah.
And I thought I looked at it and saw like he actually is throwing fewer strikes now, or at least has been so far. He's been struggling with command as much as he has with velocity.
Yeah, definitely.
Which, combined with that sort of weird last bit of the spring training,
makes me wonder if he's not well. I'm looking at some of his pitch movement numbers, and he's getting a lot more drop on his fastballs, but that isn't. It doesn't coincide with a increase in ground ball rate. In fact, his ground ball rate is like 39% or something like that. And so it's just something is really off. I'm not sure what it is.
Well, he had one good start, right? So I mean, this last one was dreadful, but the one before that was good, right? And then what was, I'm trying to remember, he's had three starts.
Two of them were six innings. He gave up two runs in the first and one run in the second.
He pitched well in that loss to the Astros.
In both of those, he sort of was, it sort of looked like he was getting fortunate. His FIP has been hanging out way up, and his batting average on balls in play was much lower, which is what part of the reason that we tried to build up our defense was so that this team would outperform their FIP and they would pick up a lot of those extra balls in play, but there's only so much that you can realistically expect.
There's only so much defense can do. And specifically, I guess I was most disappointed about his start in Safeco, where he looked so shaky, because him being shaky in the bandbox of the Astros park, I would be like, whatever. But he's supposed to be built to pitch to Safeco, and that was troubling. Yeah. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on as we go forward. Speaking of people who might benefit from Safeco, though, perhaps Evan Marshall. If we want to transition into talking about the bullpen a little bit. Because I've been, I mean, I do think he's next one down as soon as Cishek is ready to come back. But I've been mostly impressed with his ability to just kind of get in there and get fly ball outs and hold, give us two innings, eat up two innings where we need two innings eaten.
I think he's been fine. I think it's extremely strange what he's done, though. because this is a guy who his entire career and his entire MO has been built around being a ground ball pitcher.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he was a 55 to 60% ground ball guy with the Diamondbacks.
Right.
And so far I think he's around 35. I don't remember. I think he got three flyouts today, and he got two flyouts and a homer to Ichiro. Which is fine. You know, you can do that in Safeco and have better luck than you would in Arizona. And maybe that's an intentional thing. In fact, I believe that we may have something upcoming about that from one of our staff writers. But it is really strange so far to see what he's done.
I'm unfortunately don't know if we're going to have enough time to see him and see those numbers stabilize to be able to say whether he's changed, what kind of pitcher he is. Because he's probably going to go to AAA as soon as, I mean, Cishek is there in Tacoma now.
Yes.
But I'll definitely keep an eye on him in Tacoma, which I think Cheney can play a little similarly to Safeco. It's expansive out there.
It's big and wet.
It's big and wet. Yeah, exactly. So we should be able to get a good idea of what's going on, more or less. But yeah, he's definitely, I mean, it's a pleasant surprise. And even if we need, you know, maybe we need 10, 15 innings out of you while some other guys are getting right, that's fine.
Okay, I thought you were going to say, I think maybe we need 10 relievers. And I was just going to really.
Well, you know I love relievers, and I love the 8-man bullpen for that reason. Just because right now I feel, and I've said this before, that the 8-man bullpen is a better option than you know, blessings to you, Mike Freeman, but I really don't want to see you making any more starts. Let's talk bullpen generally, our level of concern with the bullpen, where we are with the 8-man pen, how long you see that going on.
I think the 8-man bullpen was a good idea to start the season. I think as soon as Cishek and Zick, I mean, Zick's already back, but as soon as Cishek's back, I think we go down to a 7-man pen because I think that moves, it bumps everyone back an inning, right? And everyone sort of fits into their prescribed roles better with Cishek in the bullpen. But, I mean, to start the inning without Zick and without Cishek, I think we needed that 8-man pen because we were putting people into roles that they weren't meant for, that they weren't comfortable with. I mean, we saw James Bezos, he had a number of appearances and really high leverage appearances that he probably shouldn't have been. But I mean, I think that's just the reality of a bullpen is sort of just a rotating door based on who's hot and who's injured. And
I would agree. There are reasonable or frustrations with it, but I saw it as a definite way of hedging. I think if Miranda and Gallardo were really struggling.
Sure,
also that, you know, having an extra guy out there that you could come in and say, like, okay, this didn't work. And we saw that in on Sunday's game where Iwakuma didn't have it. And, you know, I think I was surprised even. I don't know if I would have pulled him that quickly after three innings, but it was clear he just wasn't looking good. And they said, well, we've got this eight-man pen. And that was, I think, honestly, one of the first times where it was like they really actively – made that a benefit, made use of that advantage that they have,
definitely.
I guess. And you know, it helped that Evan Marshall did really well and had 2 1/3 shutout in or, you know, perfect innings. But, you know, and then you're able to bring in Zipchinski for special, you know, situations. Mm-hmm. You're able to bring in Altavilla, who's, you know, had some trouble with locating his slider, but still has good enough stuff to make people look silly if it's even close, and you know, you're able to get out of these situations. So
right, and I think that might be the one argument that I could see for continuing with an eight-man pen after C-Shack comes back is pairing up someone with Iwakuma so that he doesn't have to face the lineup three times through. You can have him face the lineup twice and then bring in your long man to pitch the sixth and the seventh inning.
I mean, remember the Nate Karns, Mike Montgomery combination that we had last year?
Yeah, definitely.
It was every time. Karns could not get into the fifth inning or through the fifth inning to save his life. And it was almost like a split start every single time. Mm-hmm. And I think that helped Montgomery to kind of know that, like, okay, this is probably what's going to happen. I have to prepare like I'm starting the game, even though I'm going to be coming in maybe in the fifth inning. And, you know, just having that mindset, which maybe helped him when he went to the Cubs and was like, hey, I want to be a starter again.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which was a position I had kind of tagged Miranda for before all the Smiley stuff went down.
Sure.
And I'm not sure who best. I don't think we have a real long reliever in there is one of the problems. And maybe I think one of the reasons we have to keep the eight-man bullpen, because not a one of those guys do I want pitching any more than two innings max. Not Nick Vincent, not James Pazos, not Altavilla, even though he was a starter. But, I mean, something is funky with his slider command right now. I don't know what's going on, but I hope they fix it. Thank goodness Evan Marshall was able to, like, eat up some innings. Mm-hmm. I think Zick has looked a little shaky, honestly.
He's working back, though. And he looked okay today, even though he didn't get great results. But
right.
I completely see what you're saying. I like him on the basis of his body of work and his talent. But they do have, I think, a very solid pool to choose from once Zishek is back. And that lack of a guy who can do long relief is, or that has proven long relief skill, is frustrating. But if you have guys who can go one or two innings a night and you can sort of shuttle guys back and forth if you need to from Tacoma, you know, that are solid, that gives you a little more flexibility to work around that.
Where we have Chris Heston is just turning in like great appearance after great appearance.
Yeah, right.
So, but I think that they're hesitant to pull the string on that because they don't know if they're going to have to take one of those guys and turn him back into a starter or not.
Sure, right.
That's true.
But something has to happen because we are currently by WAR. Guess where the Mariners rank in baseball by WAR, the Mariners bullpen.
The Mariners bullpen ranks
by FWAR.
In all of baseball, 25th.
I'm going to say 23rd.
John is bang on. We are 23rd.
Oh, wow.
So we have the Astros up there at 3rd, the Angels at 7th, which feels...
Bedrosian's good.
Yeah.
He is good.
Houston Street's gone for the year, though, right?
He's at least on the 60-day deal. Yeah. I think he's gone for the year, yeah.
And then the Athletics at 13, and even the lowly Rangers are ahead of us at 19.
Oh, boy.
So.
It's just because they've had to pitch so much.
Indeed. And Casey Fien did not do us many favors.
Honestly, we're probably still wearing a lot of negative WAR from that one appearance.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Chris from Twitter wants to know, Fien, Fi, Fo, Fum, is Casey's career kind of done? It sucks that we spent so much money on him, and he's been kind of crappy.
What was his deal? It was like $1.5 million.
Yeah, something like that. It wasn't too bad.
Yeah, but.
I don't think his career's over. I think he might be a candidate to shuttle from Tacoma if we ever get into a pinch, but he's certainly not on the front list.
We will not see him for at least another month or two until people kind of settle and his nerves settle down a bit. But I mean, he's a righty who's done well in the major leagues recently enough and who throws 94-95. Right. Like, he'll be okay.
Yeah.
But
while we're addressing Twitter questions about the bullpen, let's also do Anthony Satter's question. Why is Zepchinski so effective against lefties? We know he's a lefty specialist, but what specifically is it that he does that makes him such a lefty killer? Would you like to see him in a greater role than just a specialist? I don't think he's earned that. He looks panicked to me on the mound. Have you noticed that? Like, he looks so... After Haniger robbed that home run, I mean, I get being grateful, but he was like... I don't know what Haniger got from Zepchinski, but I bet it's like a gold watch.
I believe he explicitly said he was buy Haniger a steak dinner anywhere he wanted it.
Yeah, there we go.
The classic...
I enjoy the idea of the two of them out at, like, the Metropolitan or something.
No together. Communication, was it? Just sitting, staring
just sitting
at them. Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure they're both very, like, have deep issues of knowledge. I can't imagine what they relate about, though. I saw Mike Freeman and Leonis Martin, like, having a long discussion on the bench, like, while the Mariners were hitting and, like, sitting next to each other and excitedly going back and forth. And I really want to know what they were talking about now, because that's just the funniest pairing of just high energy, constantly smiling. Yeah. High energy, high frequency individuals. But to that question, I mean, his pitch combination is really difficult to pick up on for lefties. I mean, lefties in general are more susceptible to left-handed pitching, partially because you just don't see it as frequently, and partially because the pitches are moving away from you, and you often, especially in someone like Zepchinski's case, you have a tougher time of picking it up since it's coming out, starting often looking like it's coming at you. But his best pitches, he throws a changeup, but he usually works just like a sinker or slider.
Right.
And those two pitches tend to look very similar out of the hand. But his slider is, I think, usually been his go-to out pitch.
That's his out pitch, yeah. That big sweeping, it's like a sweeping slider, right? It kind of dives away from the batter and... They chase it and look silly.
If you remember sort of Jeff Nelson and what Jeff Nelson did to everyone.
Jeff Nelson.
With that sweeping, slider that was just like, this looks like it's going at my head. Oh, this is now in the strike zone. Or, oh, this looks right down the middle. Oh, it's,
in the other batter's box.
Exactly. Yeah. And so
I'm looking up the whiff rate on Zepchinski's slider, and it's 48%.
That's nuts.
It's insane.
Yeah. Is that just for lefties, or is that overall?
Overall.
Wow.
Wow.
That's impressive. So he's, essentially that combination of pitchers, or of pitches rather, just wreaks havoc on a lefty. I mean, it would be more difficult for anyone, but as a right-handed hitter, you're more used to seeing that just because you get... usually right-handed hitters are facing right-handed pitchers, so you get a little more comfortable with it. Left-handed hitters just by nature don't have as many at-bats against left-handed pitchers. So whereas that pitch will break in on a right-handed hitter and they'll be able to see it coming more easily. Obviously not that much more easily since they're still, whiffing on it, but... It's really difficult, and you'll get a lot of those. You know what Kyle Seager's swing looks like when he decides halfway through that he shouldn't swing, and he's just kind of like it. Yeah, it looks like he's like miming, like he's slow-mo punching the air in front of him suddenly. So you get a lot of those, and that is just not as effective against righties, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah, and, you know, with just that, he will face the occasional righty we've seen if it is leading, if there's another lefty in line behind that.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to be exposed some, but we definitely want to limit the amount that he's exposed to.
And that was sort of what he struggled with last year, right? Is he was really good against lefties, but he was a little bit overused,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so... if we're in a situation where we are having to use Zepchinski more, then we're in trouble overall. So
yeah.
we have good enough other options in the bullpen. It may not seem like it so far this year, but we really do, that we shouldn't have to do that too much, I guess is what I would say.
Yeah.
All right. Well, speaking of Twitter questions, I think we will take a little break and then we'll come back and answer some more of them.
I wanna be with you. Hey, I wanna be with you. I wanna be with you.
Love me, just love me.
If I didn't ride blade on curve, would you still
love me?
If I'm in my mind at work, would you still
love me?
Keep it 100, I'd rather you trust me than to
love me.
Keep it a whole 100. Don't got you, I got nothing. Hey, I got something.
I got something.
Hold up. We go function.
And we're back. All right, now is the part of the show where we take your Twitter questions and try to say smart things about them. So, John, what have we got tonight?
We have a variety of questions. We're going to start here with a question about a catcher that we all have learned to believe in and stop at various levels believing in, who has been the biggest endorser of the miles for running runners in scoring position suggested campaign. Mike Zunino. This question comes from Brypot.
LL regular.
Indeed. Do you believe Zunino can ever be an above average hitter, or should we accept he's an 80 WRC plus hitter with great defense? Jake, what do you think? We have you here. We're going to get you going here.
Mike Zunino. No, I don't think he'll ever be an above average hitter. I don't think, with a strikeout rate that high and a refusal to take walks, even if his at bats look like he's laying off the breaking pitches, he's still not taking walks. He's still striking out 30% of the time. I can't see how he's going to be an above average hitter. And honestly, I think I'm okay with him being an 80 WRC plus hitter. I think that's perfectly acceptable for a catcher.
Yeah.
Especially with his defensive chops, which, you know, maybe we weren't expecting with a first round draft pick, but I think it's okay.
Uh-huh.
He did not have a great day today, so it's not easy for me to say these things because he had a a three strikeout day.
He hit a bloop double,
but he also hit a double.
I will not hear slander against. And he had the Zunino hit by pitch.
He did do that. On that double, he had two really ugly plate appearances. I was not happy with them. He swung at some stuff he probably shouldn't have swung at in one of them. Chase something way low out of the zone. But the one where he hit the double was a really good plate appearance by him. He laid off of, I feel like we've given him a lot of credit out of for laying off what's low and outside. He really doesn't do that anymore. But I think now we need to start giving him credit when he lays off the high strike, the high fastball, because he started laying off of that more. He needs to work on laying off the low, the ball in the dirt, the curveball, because he's still chasing that. But I see improvement in his plate approach. It's just he gets himself into the good count, and then he swings and misses. I don't know where I don't know where his power is right now. I don't know if he's just, like, not seeing the ball, if he has too much to think about. It's not all coming together. I'm not giving up on him yet, though, because I do think it's a better process, and eventually we'll see a better product.
And that's, I think, The frustrating part, and you know, sort of where we've always been, I don't think he's going to be an above average hitter. You know, I don't think he's going to be an above average hitter. I don't think he's going to be an above average hitter for a catcher, which is a lower bar. But you know, if he can be an 80 WRC plus guy, and with his defense, you know, that's a fine player, and that's kind of Dan Wilson. You know, like Dan Wilson was not a great hitter. He had a couple of good hitting years, and you know, we could see Zunino having a couple good hitting years. But you know, like I think he's seeing more pitches per plate appearance this year than he ever has in his career. But like you said, like he's getting into these good counts, which is something. But then he's swinging through fastballs, or he's, you know, I've never seen as many like pitches swings where it looks like he's, where from a major league hitter where it looks like his bottom hand is above his top hand when he's when he's swinging, like almost like he's tomahawking, and it's just weird because not all of his swings look like that, and sometimes he has, you know, legitimately like good clean swings, but it's frustrating, and you know, I think he's got his swinging strike percentage, I think it's like 16 something obscene, you know, which league average is about like 10. So if he can, you know, it's always been if he could just make a little more contact,
right? But I think with like this whole thing about like focusing on making hard contact, I don't think he's doing that this year. He's getting into these good counts, and like you say, he's swinging through some fastballs. But also, when he is making contact, he's popping the ball up, right?
Yeah.
He just can't like make solid contact on the ball, and I think it'll probably come. Like, you can't go through an entire season just missing like that so much. But yeah, I mean, I'm looking at some of his batted ball stats, and a quarter of his fly balls are pop ups, and that's just outrageously high.
Yeah. It will improve from what it has been this year. I mean, just even with today's numbers, he jumped from 26 WRC plus to 42. Like, he hit a double. Like, got on base one more time. Like, good job. You're not trash. You know, so he'll be okay, I think.
Yeah.
I guess we're all in the he'll be okay. I don't think he's going to be more than that, but okay is okay.
Okay is okay.
Okay, our next question comes from Kyle Rancourt. What is the realistic ceiling for Mitch Haniger? And tied together with that from John Allen, how terrifying is his floor?
This is interesting because John and I were just trying to find player comparisons for Haniger.
That's what I did when I saw that question, too.
So I'm curious what you found. I've seen a little bit, like, Curtis Granderson a little bit. But he doesn't not prime Curtis Granderson, like, later in his career Curtis Granderson. Like, 2 years ago Curtis Granderson. But that's sort of tougher. I've seen sort of Jason Wirth thrown around.
That's the name that I came back to every time.
Yeah, I feel like it's like Jason Wirth, like, because I think we forget, like, we look at the, you know, big Jeff Bridges looking dude out there and forget, like, he was a good defender when he was younger. You know,
yeah,
like,
and he stole some bases.
Speed. Yeah, and yeah, so. I know people have talked about Michael Saunders a lot, and I think he's got more than Michael Saunders,
yeah.
I think.
I think there was another name that I saw that was kind of interesting, Justin Upton, but like an off-year Justin Upton.
not like the
outrageously good Justin Upton, but like
sure.
Those like weird years in between the really good years that he was kind of good, but yeah.
And a Justin Upton that doesn't cost Justin Upton money.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly.
Kate, have you found anyone that sort of connects for you?
There's a part of me that wants to say Joey Votto, because
in what way? Interesting.
In that,
I love it. But
in that, okay, I don't think he has the power, but
no.
Joey Votto is like impossible to get out, right?
Yes.
He is going to find a way to get on base. And I think that that is just that insane on base percentage is what sticks out to me about Haniger. I don't know if the batting average is going to hold up like that. But I don't know about the slugging, honestly. But I just feel like he's going to be the biggest pest for every single. And it was funny because I was seeing, you know, I'm friendly with the guy who runs Fish Stripes, the SB Nation blog, Thomas Bennett, for the Marlins. And then friendly with a Rangers beat writer, Levi Weaver, who's a friend of the site, great guy. Poor Levi is having a really tough time right now. And both of them, it was just so funny to watch both of them whine about Mitch Haniger. I was like, oh, wow, we have the player who is like an incredible annoyance to everybody
else.
We
have a Cole Calhoun.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know. It just, that was the first name that popped into my head when I was thinking about like, who is the hardest player? Who would I, if I was a pitcher, who would I most not want to face? And I kept coming up with Joey Votto's name when I was doing research for the Edgar Hall of Fame stuff.
Sure.
Because he's just, that OBP is. So, yeah, that's, yes, go ahead, lambaste me, if you will.
I don't think Mitch Haniger will ever run a walk rate that's higher than his strikeout rate.
I was just saying, that's the biggest difference, is just that Votto doesn't strike out much. And, like, he's been, like, a below 20% K rate guy his entire career, and like, you know, Haniger doesn't swing and miss hardly ever, but because he takes so many pitches, he gets into a lot of two strike counts, and that puts him just
by definition in
danger of striking out. So as a result, but you know, I think the idea of he gets on base, he's very good at fouling balls off, and he's, you know, got above average speed is a decent comparison there. Or have we settled on Worth as sort of the ceiling, the ceiling that you see, Jake?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's probably a good name just to throw out.
Yeah, well, and you know, I don't know what people think, what people's perception is of Jason Worth, partially because he got I think a little bit of a bad vibe for being this overpaid guy when he went to the Nationals.
Right.
And sort of injury prone. You know, he was a 3 to 5 win player for like most of his career. And
definitely.
And for like several years. So that seems very reasonable, I guess, is what I would say is, you know, it's still tough to say just because you could see a way in which adjustments are made, but based on the way that he's looked in terms of plate discipline and his physical talent and his strength and the way that he has talked about thinking about the game, as you talked about that, you know, he knows what type of hitter he is. And Kate, I think it was you who talked a little bit about how the Mariners have a lot of players who know, or the Mariners coaching staff has encouraged players, or maybe this was you, Jake, talking about having a lot of players who, you know what type of hitter you are.
Oh, I guess. That's a thing that they pushed at that hitting summit.
Yeah.
You know what kind of hitter you are. Are you a gap-to-gap guy? Are you a power hitter? Are you a slap hitter? Like, whatever.
Yeah, and Haniger seems to supremely know what kind of hitter he is. And
oh, yeah, definitely.
That'll take him a long way. So, yeah. What do you think about a floor then? Is it terrifying? Is it is it high like Dustin Ackley? Is it high like Justin Upton's?
I just don't think he's a huge. I don't feel like he's a huge risk player. I mean, I'm not scared when I see him go up there. You know. Maybe he strikes out, but I don't think he's going to do anything. Like, his outfield defense is maybe the one thing that I was like, maybe he's a little worrisome to me. Takes some kind of weird routes sometimes. I'm not sure that
he's, like, second in the league, which is, you know, DRS, whatever you may feel, but I think he's like second in the league and or like top five in the league in DRS coming into today.
Well, I mean, he had the three right there when he jumped and saved the. I mean, that's, you know, ding, ding, ding. No, I mean, it's hard. I don't really see a ton of holes in his. I'm not scared of him, basically. I'm not scared he's going to bottom out. And I know a lot of people are, because that's what we've seen. We've seen so many promised things fail. But I don't think Mitch Haniger is going to fail. Not epically.
Okay, so I just thought of a name that's connected to some names that we had already talked about. Melvin Upton Jr. maybe as a floor, where he strikes out a little bit too much. He's still taking walks. His average is maybe 250 or so. Mm-hmm. And so that it really limits the upside. But, I mean, he's still a solid league average hitter. I think that's probably maybe a realistic floor. I don't know.
I think that sounds fair.
And I agree. Like, plate discipline tends to be, I think, is a skill that is difficult, more difficult to find than physical traits, obviously. Mm-hmm. And if you're walking, it's tougher to, it's easier to break a slump when you are able to walk. Mm-hmm. And when you have speed, speed doesn't have slumps, speed doesn't take days off, speed is still valuable and defense is still valuable. So, he's a young, a guy in he's 27, I think. He'll turn, his birthday was in December, 23rd, naturally. I think, we have team control on him for a long time. Right. At a low rate, so it's not like, I think tied in with floors, it's not like he's going to be prohibitive for the Mariners if he does struggle. It's
sure.
Like, you have a backup outfielder that's still fine, or you have a right fielder that's fine,
mm-hmm.
But I think that's sort of this could just maybe be a really big get for the Mariners, that I think either of those, any of those situations, a couple weeks ago would have been like, I would take Melvin Upton, now it's like, well, he could be Justin Upton, so I think that's solid.
All right, John, you have to stop talking about Mitch Haniger now.
Yes, I apologize. I'm dragging us on. All right, our next question. Brittany Bush. Of all Mariners pitchers, who has the most fun delivery to watch?
Edwin Diaz.
Oh.
Easy peasy. He just is so fun to watch. He just, it's the way he slings it up there.
That arm whip.
Yeah.
Yeah. I am going to go with... Actually, I really like when he is on. I like Iwakuma's delivery.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah,
like
okay,
the balance,
there we go.
And I love Mark Szczepanski's leg kick. I think it's so beautiful.
I would have said Iwakuma, but since you said Iwakuma, I'll probably go Paxton.
There we go.
I really enjoyed, even though it was detrimental, his reach in the high in the sky thing. he's sort of made that a little bit less, but... It really looks like he's coming through, like he's winding up a catapult, like when he bends back and then it, as he unleashes it. It's extremely satisfying. Our next question comes from Hillary Kirby. What should Gene Segura dump over the head of the next player of the game?
So we've had gum balls, so...
Yeah. Do you remember the game last year? I don't know, maybe it was 2 years ago when they dumped trash on Logan Thorson.
Yes.
Do I still have that picture saved on my phone? Yes.
Who is the most deserving of trash being dumped on them if they're the player?
Danny
of the
Valencia.
Game? Yeah, it was Danny Valencia. it's Danny Valencia. But I was wondering if anyone was going to think anything else, but that is the correct answer.
I would to continue the theme of like ridiculous candy and have from gumballs to gobstoppers. That might hurt.
mm-hmm. I'm curious. I mean, Gene Segura does seem like the kind of guy who knows where candy is at all times. He does kind of have that little kid like bounce in him, like, I know something. I'd be interested to see some like chocolate milk. Just to like really throw people.
Yeah, so no, I mean,
what do you, and then it curdles,
what do you think Gatorade
and it's gross.
Is? What do you think
no,
Gatorade
there's a curdling
is?
Effect. No, it's got to be like Pixie Sticks. I would go
ooh,
for
yeah, there you go.
Opened Pixie Sticks.
Open Pixie Sticks, I was going to say.
Just have a fine sugar sift over them.
That'd be a neat, especially if you like swirled up the colors. That could just be a fun like rainbow shower.
It's like
maybe
color
like those
run.
Like color runs. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big fan.
All right.
Our next question comes from Ricky at Whiskey Rick.
That means you have to read it in a Scottish accent.
Oh, I've already forgotten it again.
I cannot do one.
Projected record at the end of the month.
Not
no, that's I always Irish. It always,
always comes out Irish.
God. Ending the series against Detroit and Cleveland.
There. You got to get a little bit of the angry. It has to sound angrier. That's good. Jake, sorry. You were going to answer this
question. No, that's all right. That was well worth it. I think we're going to be 500. 500 at the end of the month.
I like it.
I think we're going to win 3 at Oakland, 2 at Detroit, and 1 at Cleveland.
Oof. I agree with that.
That seems fair. Yeah, I would take that.
Maybe just one under. Maybe we win 2 at Oakland if things go.
Which I think we talked about that. We had a similar question either last week or 2 weeks ago, and like it was after. I think it was 2 weeks ago, and that seems so much more doable. you know, that if just coming in at the end of April around 500 seems so much more attainable now than then, which is just a lovely feeling.
I think with Oakland, they're dealing with some injuries. Like Graven had his start scratched, and Simeon went down with that broken wrist or whatever. And so, yeah, I think they're going to be a lot weaker than maybe than they've. I don't know. I mean, they did look good against Texas today, but everyone looks good against Texas. and then Detroit, Felix and Paxton are our first two pitchers in that series, and so I think that's two wins there. And Cleveland, they've kind of looked shaky to start this year, but I think that's a good team still. And
yeah, their starting rotation's I think been a little bit unlucky and is better than they've shown.
Do we know who we might be facing there?
On their side,
yeah.
I don't know. I know that Miranda and Gallardo lineup is the first two starters, and then Felix will be the third.
Oh, okay.
So that's not great.
Could be better. But I think, around 500.
Let's hope.
And that's within a reasonable stretch to capitalize on the health of the bullpen, hopefully. Mm-hmm.
I think that the series against Oakland will give us a really good idea of, are we a okay team who's been beating up on some not great teams, or are we a good team?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Because I don't think the A's are a good team, necessarily. I think they've been getting kind of lucky.
Mm-hmm.
Our penultimate question here from Chris from Bothell as well. Find something. It's not really a question. It's a command. Find something genuinely nice to say about C.B. Buckner,
who is in trouble again for his horrible strikeout call against Jason Wirth.
Oof, boy.
Yeah, it was really. There's a whole Fangraphs article on it today by Nick Stellini about he's just so smug when he knows he's bad at his job, and he knows there's nothing that can happen to him. I don't know if I can say anything nice about him. He wears pants that are neither too tight nor too loose. That's the nicest thing I can say about C.B. Buckner.
I saw someone on Twitter say that he has nice skin, and I had looked, and he does. It's true. He also has a pretty fun strikeout call.
He does.
When he rings them up.
As long as you're a disinterested party and you do not care at all about the teams that are playing, because I don't even like Jason Wirth all that much, and I felt bad for him.
He has people with interesting names around him. I think He has an interesting name. It happens to be Christopher Blake, which is a little bit less fun than CB. But the rest of his crew being Mark Carlson, which is not great, Manny Gonzalez, which is fine, and Fielden Culbreth.
Oh, yes.
The crew chief of his squad.
Well, you just said
is,
that so you could get to Culbreth. I
mean,
you're
absolutely correct, Ed. And that is his main quality. He's also born in Jamaica, which is interesting.
Oh,
I'd be
go.
Curious to know how he got into baseball.
All right, stop umpiring, humanizing him. This is uncomfortable for me.
All right. Our final question today comes from staff writer Isabel Manassian. She asks, well, I guess there's another request. These aren't
bossy.
Twitter demands. These are these are Twitter requests. But pick an ice cream flavor for the entire lineup, for each individual player on the entire lineup, and if you would like Ichiro. And for the interest, in the interest of time, I think each of us are just going to pick one for a single player. And we can pick one for Ichiro together, perhaps.
Yeah, I like
sure.
I can start. I would say that Leonis Martin is chocolate chip. Because sometimes there's a really wide range of chocolate chip enjoyance. Some days you get the big chocolate chunks and it's fantastic. And some days you get like the little bits and it's like, why did I even bother with this?
Oh, so. That's sad. But also Leonis would be birthday cake ice cream.
Ooh, nice.
Fair enough.
I'm going to go with something like caramel hazelnut crunch for
Ooh.
Taylor Motter, because he packs a punch and he's wild and crazy. And
he would definitely be an adventurous ice cream flavor. I can see that.
Definitely.
And I'm going to pick rum raisin for Gerard Dyson, because I feel like there's something a little bit dangerous about rum raisin, a little bit fun, maybe a little bit sexy. Like, of all the ice cream flavors, I think rum raisin is the cool ice cream flavor. So.
Interesting.
All right.
Man, it makes me think, perhaps I should not finish my sentence, because I feel like it would make me not invited back on the podcast for you. But its associations are more grandmotherly.
What? No. Oh, clearly rum raisin is the sexiest ice cream flavor. Do not at me.
All right.
All right. So what about Ichiro? Ichiro is clearly the best ice cream flavor there is, and that's
indeed.
Chocolate chip mint.
Ooh. What about cookie dough?
Wait, what are you saying? Cookie dough. Like,
cookie
dough.
Cookie dough.
Cookie dough. Like, you don't put that accent on the dough.
Why not?
And also, nothing about Ichiro is doughy, so I reject that out of
that's
hand.
True, yeah.
That's fair.
No, he's chocolate chip mint because he's cool, and he tastes so great, and you could just eat so much of it all the time forever.
There's something a little reserved and classic about chocolate mint, too, I think. That
sure, okay, there we
but
go.
But it's also it's a little bit of a twist.
It's
not
a fun
just
twist
regular
on
chocolate
a classic.
Chip. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So... I can get down with that.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you to those of you who sent in your questions. And thank you, Jake, for joining us today and laying some pitching knowledge upon our heads.
Yeah, my pleasure. It was a lot of fun.
And we will get back together with you again next week. Until then, go Mariners.